Right now, I'd like to welcome the Director of Choral Activities at Western Michigan University to the studio via phone. It's Kimberly Dunn-Adams. Thank you very much for joining me this morning.
Oh, it's such a pleasure, Kara. Thanks for having me.
It's great to touch base again. It has been a number of months, and it's painful in a way to look back at last spring because things were progressing toward a glorious end of the season, of the semester, of these fantastic choral works that were on the docket for you, your choirs, and your students were participating in all kinds of terrific sounding performances, including the Bach St. Matthew Passion. I mean, I'm sure you were in the middle of all of that.
Yeah, there was, you know, the spring was a very difficult time for musicians because in a performance-based art, you know, you're really working towards the concert and when you get to share that music with others. And so for a lot of people, that was devastating not to be able to share the music that they love and that they had worked on. But one of the positive things to come out of all of this is that people have really turned to sharing not just the final performance product online, but people are talking about the process a little bit more. And sometimes people are sharing their practice even just in an effort to connect with others. And so I think we've seen a big shift in the art too.
A little more intimacy afforded by people in their practice space, putting it online.
Yes. Yeah. For some of our students, they went from rehearsing and then the performance is, you know, a large choir in a large concert hall with tuxedos and concert gowns. And then I was hopping onto social media in April and May and seeing those same students that we would ordinarily see from about a football field's length away. I was watching videos of them practicing and performing from their driveways at home for their neighbors and their local communities. And I think that those kinds of connections are really important, too.
What's an example of a performer or a group that did kind of reveal or pull back the curtain on practice, on what it takes to get a performance ready?
Well, I think a lot of individual performers were showing their process online. I think there are some arts organizations that have adapted to the pandemic reality in really interesting and beautiful ways. Voces 8 out of England, they've been to Kalamazoo
mm-hmm.
many
times. There's a connection
times.
There.
One of my former students, Blake Morgan, is with that group now, and they've been incredibly nimble. They put forth a great deal of educational programming really early on, and they were doing lectures online and presenting materials on, you know, how to practice and how to approach early music. They even put on and filmed a whole series of concerts with some of the greatest choral groups that we have in England specifically. But, these are some of the best choral groups in the world. And they're also really doing good work with higher education, calling in and Skyping for choirs and seminars. So I think it's for nimble arts organizations, it's been a very interesting time.
I would also like to bring up a number of people who might make you smile, too, as former students who were actively engaging as best they could with the circumstances during these last few months. And they include some of your grad students. I talked to Austin McWilliams, who went to Kansas for the Ad Astra Music Festival and successfully brought off a distance and safe series of concerts, as well as Nick Sinkowitz, who really delved into the science of singing and had interesting things to say during an interview. And Ahmed Ansaldua with his Border Crossings, plowing through the pandemic with new recording projects about to be released. I mean, these are people I'm sure that give you hope for singing through difficult times?
Well, they absolutely do. Well, Nick's article came out in the Choral Journal a day or two ago.
Oh, wonderful.
And so I will, it's incredibly interesting. I remember that the initial paper was just fascinating. And I'll be making it required reading for my classes at Western this fall. That's how proud I am, and that's how good the article is. And, of course, Austin is he's just a joy to have around. I'm thrilled he's going to be staying in Michigan for a little while longer. Ahmed, you know, the work that he is doing with Border Crossing, his professional choral ensemble that's based in Minnesota, is absolutely incredible. You know, the recording deal, they're going to be releasing some sheet music editions, which is fantastic because most of the music they do is not readily available. And I should also mention that they just won one of Chorus America's highest award, the ASCAP Award for Adventurous Programming.
Oh, wow.
That award was actually given to, it was three ensembles this year, and two of them are directed by Western Michigan School of Music alums.
Ahmed Ansaldúa was born in Mexico of Mexican and Egyptian parents, and whether he wanted to or not, going to school in America has been targeted at times for the way he looks and his accent. And he was uniquely able to engage in these social justice issues and racial justice issues as well. And I'm afraid many people have now put a sort of a burden on Ahmed to kind of lead the way as best he can, as someone who speaks honestly about these things. And you must be proud of him for that, too.
I am so proud of him, and I learned from him.
Mm-hmm.
Every social media post that his ensemble puts out, every concert they put together, it's more than just beautiful music. It's lessons, context, history, meaning. He weaves themes throughout his concerts on multiple levels. And I think that the work he's doing is absolutely groundbreaking.
This all goes to set up a sort of a through line of how choral singing and teaching can reverberate, you know, through the country, through the world, through society. And I think that's, you know, beyond the day-to-day work of it, you're seeing some of the fruits of your labor, Kim. You've had some very ambitious goals for singers individually and as groups since you've been director of choral activities. And I'm wondering if you've adjusted some of those goals for this semester for ways to see them succeed in a safe way, you know, during this pandemic.
Well, I think there's kind of two things going on. You know, we've talked about what it is the alumni of our program are doing and how things are so different right now for everyone. So one of the things I'd actually like to mention about the importance of choral music is that we read a creed every year. It's the Creed of the Collegiate Chorale, and it was written by Robert Shaw. And there are two sections of that creed that I have read to my choirs as a choral director since I started collegiate conducting back in the early 2000s. And these are things that I think have not changed through the pandemic. These are things that are completely constant for choral music. And then there's a lot that's changed too, but the two things that have not changed, and I'll just read a section from the creed because I think it's that important. We say that we believe that in a world of political, economic, and personal disintegrations, music is not a luxury, but a necessity, not simply because it is therapeutic, nor because it is the universal language, but because it is the persistent focus of humankind's intelligence, aspiration, and goodwill. That statement tells us a little bit about what sort of music has done in the last few months to serve people. And we see people turning to it in times of great stress and disconnection with each other. And that relates to the second statement in the Creed, which is that we believe that music is always a community enterprise. The solo performance does not exist. Even its creation is an attempt to communicate, and every performance an effort to unite the minds of human beings of different generations. And what that brings us to is how people have changed their sense of artistic production in the last few months. When you're shut in your house, you know, how are you able to perform in a way that is a community enterprise? And so the choirs this year at Western, we're doing everything we've always done, which is that we are treating music as the persistent focus of intelligence, aspiration, and goodwill, but we're also attempting to connect to people in other ways. And so we are working to get our music recorded, to get it out online. We'll be live streaming some things or streaming pre-recorded things. And we're going to be engaging a lot with the community in different ways, ways that are not just through performance, but through actual connection with community organizations.
There exists an absolutely beautiful CD that I have been relying on for programming called Ex Corde, featuring the University Chorale. And it's getting old now, I guess. It seems new. But it is available, of course, iTunes and any other streaming platform, Spotify, and physical copies might still be around too. But I'm glad to hear that that this is one way forward, that we'll hear new material. Now, physically on campus, classes started Wednesday. What did you see in the Dalton Center? Was it pretty quiet, or was there an alarming influx of people on campus?
You know, it's hard to describe. There are lots of places that are empty, that are normally never empty. And at other places, there's, you know, it almost seems normal. I was on campus the other day and saw the marching band rehearsing outdoors. And that felt so comforting.
Yes.
You know, and then other places, you know, I keep walking the wrong direction down the hallway because one stairwell only goes up and the other only comes down. So there are things that are different. The hardest thing is what we've been dealing with for months, which is, you know, teacher-student relationships are so built on connection and feedback. And masks and or, you know, video conferencing really obscures a lot of the information that we share without speaking.
Yes. Yes. Hard to put a name to it, but yes.
But, you know, the students are, you know, they are still here. They are still learning. And I'm really hopeful that we're going to learn in new ways and find things that work better than the old ways of doing them.
Jun Ching Lin, the violinist concertmaster of the KSO, said he was able to use masks to play violin with a string quartet, but was surprised at how much information he missed by not being able to read expressions of the other players.
That's absolutely it. I had, over the summer, we were testing different outdoor acoustical spaces at Western, because the scientific guidance indicates that the safest rehearsal spot is outdoors where there's constant fresh air. And I want my students to be as safe as they possibly can be. So over the summer, I asked for a volunteer group. I was hoping maybe 8 people tops would come and come walk around campus with me and sing in the parking garage and a few other spaces. And I had 20 people show up that day ready to sing. And it was amazing to conduct a choir and not watch mouths for diction and not be able to see the precise moments when people were taking breath. And it was true that you lose so much information, but I'm choosing to look at the fact that my other perceptual senses are going to be strengthened. There are other ways that I'm going to figure out how to get that information. And again, we'll all be better for it.
And another musician I talked to, a trumpeter, said he was encouraging in himself and others to use more body movement to, you know, make it a lot more obvious that you're breathing in, breathing out, and cutting, you know, using phrasing with physicality.
Yes. We actually did some work with that in our test sections and discovered the group sang better when everybody conducted together. So I think I'll be teaching conducting through choir rehearsals this semester and eyebrow calisthenics. Got to engage those eyebrows. I told them all to lift their eyebrows every time they were taking a breath, and it helped immensely.
Well, you should also darken those eyebrows into sort of villainesque caricatures so that you can really catch every movement. Oh. A whole bunch of Count Draculas. May I ask, are there some sweet spots outside on campus that singers are drawn to that I could possibly wander by and hear some singing?
Well, we're going to be rehearsing in the amphitheater that is right outside WMUK.
Well, how fortunate.
So you're welcome to come listen at any time. And it is an acoustical sweet spot, particularly for whoever it is that's standing in the stage area as opposed to the seats. It's set up so that if I, as the director, stand down there, you can hear me clearly without needing a PA system or any kind of amplification. We did find that the parking garage was glorious for solo or duet singing, but any more than about six people, and it gets a little messy. Not to mention the fact that the parking spaces still have salt and dirt from last winter.
Yeah, a little grimy, you might say, yes.
A little grimy, but, you know, we're not snobby about it. We just love to sing.
What do the choirs look like this year? I know that there are multiple ensembles, all male, all female, some that are non-majors, some that are majors only. What are some of the choirs looking like?
Well, so we still have the same groupings as before. University Chorale is a mixed choir. Anima is treble voices only. Amphion is lower voices only. And then Campus Choir this year is running as an online-only ensemble. And it is still open to all students and the public. It's directed by two new graduate students that are just absolutely amazing. Mm-hmm. I know that we'll be talking about them on the radio in a few years as well.
Probably.
And so we're trying to offer the opportunity for students that don't feel safe coming to in-person classes and rehearsal. We're offering that online option for those students so that they can still feel a part of the choral community and participate in music making, and for those who need it for graduation, they don't end up behind in their sequence. I think it's really important to be student-centered in terms of how you offer your classes and ensembles. The other choirs that are meeting in person, Amphion, Anima, and Chorale, are all divided into groups of 8 to 12. And so they'll be focusing on chamber music this semester. Mm. And that means then that I'm conducting 8 chamber ensembles instead of 2 choirs. Most of the rep for each ensemble is different, although they will be doing at least one piece, will be done by absolutely everybody.
Well, here at the end of our conversation, let's talk about the pieces you selected, and maybe just by acknowledging music is one of those things that is perfect. There's a piece for every occasion. There's a piece for every feeling. There's music through the ages that addresses times of crisis like this and much more.
Yeah. So we're doing a variety of different pieces and different genres, but every single one was selected with this idea that it needs to connect to what we're feeling right now. Mm. And so one of the pieces Chorale will be doing is called Water Fountain by Meryl Garbus of Tune Yards, which is about It's about the lack of drinkable water in society and the collapse of infrastructure. And it's actually connected to a charity that is raises money for water, clean water. We'll be doing Psalm 23 by Bobby McFerrin, who's a noted jazz vocalist and improviser. And he tells us that the key to improvisation is motion, that you have to keep going forward regardless of whether or not you are fearful. And I think that that idea really speaks to where we are right now as a community. Anima is doing a piece called The Little Road by Moira Smiley. And the composer writes about the score that it's a wistful and resolute song about choosing to learn new things. To me, that absolutely reflects where I feel university teaching is. All of the professors at Western have been learning new technology and new ways of creating assessments. I can't just walk into a room and listen to what's coming back at me and have that be the end of it. It's a lot of our learning is online now. We have to learn new ways of doing things. And the students do too. Mm-hmm. And so I've picked music that promotes a positive message without a lack of acknowledgement that we're in a difficult spot right now. We're doing a piece called Breath that was originally sung by Sweet Honey and the Rock and written by Issei Barnwell. And we're looking at the Sacred Harp music tradition, which is uniquely American. And we're actually looking specifically at the Sacred Harp music that was sung by Black Americans. And so we're really, really looking at, where we are, where we've been, and where we'd like to go in all of this music. And we'll be talking about that in class.
I think some of the pieces that you mentioned and the traditions that you mentioned are also use music as a way to evolve out of your moment, as a way to recognize your uniqueness, your specialness, your humanity, even when the times are or circumstances are telling you that you're less than. And very important, yeah. And I'm glad that you programmed music that was a reminder to yourself as well as students. everybody needs the solace and the energy and positivity music can bring, I think.
Yeah. And I think that, I think that music serves a lot of different purposes. And I think it is perfectly fine for music to just be performed because it's beautiful. But I think right now we all just need a reminder sometimes that that music has a message. And in the choral art, we're just so well positioned for that because we sing with words most of the time. one of the things that we're always looking at is, what is the poet saying and how does the composer set that poetry or prose?
There is a WMU Choir's Facebook page.
And there is.
There have been some lovely messages posted, hopeful messages posted there through the summer and at the beginning of this semester. Is that where we may find the best information on any performances or sharing of videos, things like we were talking about? Is that probably the best place to look for that?
I think so. We're going to be ramping up how much we post on that account over the next few weeks. We were posting a lot earlier in the summer and then took a little break to organize ourselves for the year. Our WMU Choirs page on Facebook is great for information. We are going to be putting up more content on our website, which is at wmich.edu/choral studies. And at some point, we'll be reactivating our Twitter account for those that are not on Facebook. You'll be able to find lots of information about our streams there.
I would also recommend to listeners that you can always call the music office at the School of Music. And there's a weekly newsletter that will probably start operating again soon. And it kind of brings together all the activity and some of the highlights. That comes out about once a week. And that would be a good way personally. I like email. So that's a good way too, to feel folded in to the futures of these marvelous students you have. I forgot to ask you about auditioning for this semester and all your new students coming in. Were you able to meet them online or in person? How did you manage that?
Oh, Google Forms are just an absolute blessing. We did our auditions online, and students submitted recordings of themselves, and they were singing from everywhere. There were recordings from cars and backyards, bedrooms, living rooms, some even from concert halls and churches. And what I was expecting to hear, lower quality because of all of the different situations that people are in. And I will tell you that the recorded auditions I heard this fall were some of the best I've heard in all of my time at Western. I was beaming from ear to ear. And our students' resilience and creativity, it's inspiring.
Why don't we leave it there for today, Kim? And I really look forward to checking in with you again, especially when we can celebrate some music making and the results of all the preparation and practice. I'd like to pick out one of these songs, and I'm personally going to choose the Sweet Honey in the Rock selection. This one's really spoke to me as a kind of a comfort song, almost a cradle song, that just really lifted my spirits. Any words about this one?
I would just, you said it all. Just, you know, sit back, sway back and forth, and enjoy it. Sweet Honey in the Rock is it's one of my favorite ensembles, and I'm so glad that you're playing that today.
I am glad to be able to talk to you, Kim, and to be reminded of your incredible dedication to the art of singing and to bringing students through any circumstances into a positive experience and the importance of choral singing beyond having a show and professionalism. It goes way beyond that, right?
Mm-hmm. Your instrument is your body, and so everybody should participate. Kara, thank you so much for talking to me today.
I look forward to the next time we get to chat. Thank you, Kim.
All right. Okay.
Listen more often to things than to things. Listen more often to things than to things. 'Tis the ancestor's birth when the fire's voice is heard. 'Tis the ancestor's birth in the voice of the water.